My name is Andrea Götzke. I'm at the International Commons Conference in Berlin at the Heinrich Böll Foundation. And I'm here with Pat Mooney, who has done two workshops here today. And Pat, maybe you could introduce yourself first, give a bit of background.
Sure. Again, my name is Pat Mooney. I'm the executive director of a civil society organization in Canada called Etc. Group. We've been, since the 1970s, working on the impacts of new technologies and how they affect marginalized peoples in different fields. Mm-hmm. And I've been here at the Commons meeting. It's been one of a series of meetings, in fact, but this is by far the biggest, looking at the Commons in the last few years. And we were trying to understand the differences between the approaches taken on the digital commons, for example, and with the more physical commons that I tend to work with more often.
Mm-hmm. Today you've talked about the area of biology, I think, and bioengineering. Mm-hmm. And maybe you could share a bit of your perspective, what exactly you're working on in that field.
Well, one of the concerns we have, I guess, is that someone's open commons, in some case, or open source approach to knowledge can also prevent someone else from their commons. And a case came up last week that I was involved in Japan, which was at the United Nations Conference on Biological Diversity, where they negotiated a protocol on access and benefit sharing, which was to give particularly indigenous and local communities some benefit from their commons, from the biological diversity that they protect and learn from and use themselves. The idea was that they would share their commons with the rest of the world, but under certain conditions, kind of, in which they would get some benefits from the sharing of their commons. And what, in fact, transpired in the international negotiations was that the local communities have given up, allowed access to their commons, but in return they're getting virtually nothing. What's happening with the digital commons is that digital research these days is that it's possible now for someone to go into a community, an indigenous community, to take a sample of any sort of biological material of any kind and assay it rather quickly, so they can actually map the genome of that material, upload it onto the internet, and so the biological information is there in a digital format for anyone to use, and then no benefits go to the community. So that kind of an approach to the commons is really threatens the integrity of the indigenous communities. When they began their negotiations 7 years ago, it cost $3 billion and it took 13 years to map a single genome. Today it takes about less than 2 weeks and it costs less than $10,000. By the time they actually ratify this new protocol at the United Nations, it will take less than 15 minutes, it will cost less than a few hundred dollars, and it can be done with a single molecule of any biological material. So it makes a mockery of the commons of indigenous peoples, that they will have no way of protecting their interests in this because of the new technological developments that take place.
So what would be your suggestion in that case on what to do about that case, that issue?
Well, I think the only thing that can be done is to establish some kind of an international mechanism, an international fund or an international center of some sort, to which all of societies can contribute funds. Which would then go to the communities, indigenous communities around the world, but it wouldn't be on the basis of specific contributions of germplasm or medicinal plants or anything like that. It would just be perhaps a percentage of the profits of the pharmaceutical industry, the cosmetics industry, food and beverage industries, and so on, could pay that percentage, and it would go into a pool of money that then could be accessed by those communities. To me, that would probably be the only viable solution.
Hmm.
But it's not being done. There's no plans for it to be done. And so I think without that, they'll just be ripped off.
That, I think, goes to or corresponds to that example in Ecuador, that everybody who takes a stake in that certain common takes a responsibility. So, and that we all... everybody, it's a community of everybody involved, yeah. while in that case, a few people are benefiting from it while the others are not.
Yeah. Well, that's always a danger here, that when you look at, for example, the interest that the pharmaceutical industry has on medicinal plants, it's usually the model used by the companies is that they will look for at least three communities that use that medicinal plant for relatively similar purposes. And if they find those three communities having the same interest, then they say, okay, this has probably got some sort of value from the point of view of the company, and so they then want to use that material. Mm-hmm. But what we found is that really on average with pharmaceutical companies, the plants that they choose to work from tend to be in eight different communities, quite different indigenous communities, and usually in as many as three different countries, sometimes many more than that, but on average three different countries. So then the pharmaceutical company is in the position of being able to say, okay, I'll get the best deal from this community in this country and the other communities in the other countries that also use that plant and have for thousands of years perhaps get no benefit whatsoever. So it's really the Western industrialized power that's able to determine who gets benefits.
Hmm. Another thing in the workshop this morning was about a critique of openness in the area of biology and biological engineering.
Yeah.
Maybe you could explain a bit about that.
Well, there's kind of an extreme form of genetic engineering. We're used to that in biotechnology, but this is sort of extreme, and it's called synthetic biology, where, in fact, people build their own DNA. It's technically quite possible these days for even amateurs to be able to get the software and the equipment, the hardware even, mm-hmm. to construct DNA. It doesn't usually go anywhere, it doesn't usually serve any purpose, but there are now programs run by MIT, for example, and Stanford University in the United States, where they encourage people to come together and build sections of DNA, what they call biobricks. And the biobricks that have been constructed are actually put on, literally on shelves in a sense, and they're available to anyone else to be able to use that biobrick and insert it into a species, a microbe or a plant or whatever, and as open access information and biological information. Mm-hmm. That's a very interesting idea, and it's nice that they're sharing that in a way, but among the things that have been constructed using synthetic biology have been the polio virus, the 1919 flu virus that killed so many people at that time, and even the smallpox virus has been constructed. So you can find yourself building things which are extremely dangerous. And it's a question whether or not that technology should really be made available to everybody to be able to use that way.
Mm-hmm. And so you would say that open access, that is actually an area where you think open access should not be implemented, or where that information should be kept secret. But then can you keep information secret?
No. Well, I think probably the only solution really is is to insist that the public debates these issues, knows mm-hmm. what's involved, and then some sort of norm is established in societies where we say, well, we don't use it for these purposes. Mm-hmm. So as societies, we police ourselves in a sense to make sure that we don't abuse these kinds of life forms. But the real concern, I suppose, is not just that. But it is a concern for sure that you could accidentally create a microorganism that could be dangerous for the environment or for our lives. You could also intentionally do that, I suppose. You could have the willful construction of new diseases or something this way. The real worry beyond that for us is that it leads toward what we call sort of the biomass economy, that suddenly people are building microbes, or companies are building microbes, commercially releasing them to manage biomass. And as we end the fossil fuel economy, we go then to the biomass economy, and these are ways for them to really control that, which I think is both perhaps environmentally risky and perhaps even risky to our health, but it's also very disruptive of our economy and perhaps dangerous in the long term for our societies.
Hmm. And what would be your strategy in that? I mean, I think this would also go back to the code of conduct, or how do we, an agreement on how we want to deal with those resources, or but what do you think about what licenses do those DNA, does this DNA information have? For example, if it was something like the GPL in free software or something where you have to, this has to be used in a certain way, what do you... How is that in that field?
Well, in the short term, what we're saying is there should be a moratorium against the use of the technology commercially. Companies shouldn't be using microbes in the field and in the real environment and turning them into commercial products until governments and societies have a chance to look at their implications and decide whether or not they want the commercial use of these technologies. So at the point of release into the environment and the point of commercial use, we're saying that those shouldn't be done. And there's actual debate going on in the United Nations now about whether or not there should be that moratorium. So we hope that eventually there will be. In the longer term, I guess, we think if we find that technologies can be used safely, if products can be developed that are safe, then that would be fine. But I do worry about the logic of suggesting that we can take everything we use fossil carbon for now, today, the plastics, the chemicals, the fuels, and the food, and everything else that we get from fossil carbon. We can turn around and then get it from living biological materials today. I think the planet can't afford to do that. It's too risky for the world to do that. We don't have enough biomass to do that. And what they're really trying to enclose with this technology is the world's biomass. The fact that the companies use all the time is that less than one quarter of the world's annual terrestrial biomass is in the marketplace, is actually commercialized in the corporate economy, which means that three quarters of the world's biomass isn't really yet in the economy. It's certainly used by nature, it's used by us to survive, but it's not commercialized. Their goal is to use the synthetic biology as a technology, and the patents around that as well, to take over that commons, to take over all of the biomass that we all depend upon that hasn't yet been commodified. That, I think, we want to oppose. I think there are many challenges to the commons idea right now. At the scale of atoms, there's a challenge, which is through nanotechnology, that it's possible now for companies to actually own patents on 33 different elements in the periodic table when at the nanoscale. And patents that are being so that's at the bottom in a sense. There's that kind of challenge of the commons with the level of the periodic table, but at another level, there's the technologies around geoengineering, which are being used or being proposed to be used as a response to climate change, and there we have strategies being proposed by scientific organizations and governments in some cases, suggesting that we can delay global warming or we can reduce the effects of global warming if we can either block or we can reflect sunlight. It's called solar radiation management, and some of the techniques seem right out of sort of a science fiction thrillers. You can blast salt spray from the oceans into the clouds and whiten the clouds so they reflect more sunlight. You can blast sulfates into the stratosphere very high up so that you dull the sky and block the sunlight from coming in, and you lower temperatures. So these are ways to sidestep climate change, at least temporarily. Well, but they amount to, again, someone saying they can control our climate. And they have the right to control our climate, and they can control the stratosphere. It's their responsibility. And we think that's simply absurd. It can't be that individual countries or companies working with countries should reserve to themselves the right to manage the thermostat of the planet. But that's what's being proposed. We have both the UK government and the US government talking quite enthusiastically about strategies that they could develop to delay global warming, which means for them, of course, that they don't have to do anything. They can sit back and tell their industries, don't worry about greenhouse gas emissions. We have a technological fix to solve the problem instead. In the meantime, someone else is controlling everyone's environment.
So I think You've in the second workshop, you've discussed those issues and come up with some strategy on how to go forward.
Yeah, it's a very short-term strategy, but we think it has some. It has to be pursued in some way because it's being pursued by at least some of the major countries. There will be in the year 2012, in May 2012, there'll be a summit of all the heads of state through the United Nations. So it's called the Rio Plus 20 Summit. It'll be in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. It's 20 years after the Earth Summit of 1992, so it's a big environmental summit. And the big proposal on the table for that summit, coming from industrialized countries, is that we should be pursuing a so-called green economy. And this is the biomass I was talking about before, primarily. And so their suggestion is, you know, everyone will go towards this clean, green sort of economic strategy, which means using biomass. We think that has to be challenged, and it's very possible to challenge it. So our proposal is that the Commons should go to the Rio Plus 20 summit, and we should be talking about our Commons future and proposing an alternative strategy for the economy and for our lives and livelihoods that is in the style of the Commons, and that the process to get to Rio Plus 20 should be one in which we negotiate with governments en route to that, with a specific program of action, and we begin that work at the World Social Forum that takes place in February in Dakar, Senegal, in February of 2011. So we have that period of time in which we sort of formulate our plans and then go into the international negotiations at the summit in Brazil with a real plan of our own.
From the examples that you've been talking about, I have the feeling that the greatest challenge that we have now, or the one thing that needs to be worked on, is actually the governance of the commons, or the organization of the community around the commons, like from the first example of the indigenous communities and the exploitation, to the second example of the biobricks, but then how do we deal with a corporation like dimming, or the states dimming the atmosphere, like how do we actually organize and make things better?
Yeah. Well, the same conference in Japan of the Biodiversity Convention that made a mess of access and benefit sharing, they did agree to a moratorium against geoengineering. So we actually have on the books 193 countries agreeing that there should be no geoengineering. So government have agreed to the moratorium against geoengineering. This was only decided a few days ago. So how it will be addressed by the UK and the United States, we're not entirely sure. The UK is bound by the decision in the United Nations, but the United States is not, because the United States isn't a member of the Biodiversity Convention. We expect the US will still honor it, and there'll be no initiatives, at least in the near future, to do these experiments in the stratosphere. But we don't know how long that'll last, and so we think that the there has to be a large international debate about the idea of geoengineering over the next couple of years. And when we get to the Rio Plus 20 conference in 18 months from now, at that point, we think there should be a ban on geoengineering, not just a moratorium. And we should actually invoke something called the Environmental Modification Treaty, which was actually established in 1978, and say that any country that does geoengineering is actually in violation of that treaty. It's a treaty that's never really been enforced, but it does have the rule of law, and we could use it as a tool to block the United States.
Okay, interesting. Just got to go back to one thing I forgot to ask you when we were talking about the biobricks and the openness approach. What is the positive thing about openness or open access to such knowledge?
I guess, yes, the things could be researched and developed which might have social value. It's theoretically possible. I'm much more concerned about trying to conserve the existing biological diversity that we have rather than creating new diversity. I think we need to protect what's there. I think that the possibility of constructing life forms that are beneficial to us is pretty limited, and it's much more likely we'll produce things that are dangerous than things that are positive. Mm. It mostly will produce things that aren't of any use to anybody. They'll just die. They won't survive. Mm. But it is dangerous. Earlier this year, we had scientists at Cambridge University announce that they were able to trick, using synthetic biology again, they were able to trick how a cell reads its DNA. And in doing that, they've moved from being able to, from where all of life pretty much builds only 20 amino acids to make all forms of life. Now they say they can actually have 276 amino acids to build life. Well, that's a huge difference. What that means is that you could have more biological diversity that's unnatural in a test tube than you could have natural biodiversity in the Amazon. And you could have life forms that the planet has never even seen before. I just don't know how that's particularly positive.
I agree. My thought was just in the direction that keeping knowledge, like knowledge that is, has been produced by scientists and that is there, it could also be other, like how do you build the atomic bomb?
Sure, or exactly.
Things yeah. like knowledge that is potentially dangerous.
Yeah.
But you like once knowledge is there, I would think that it's more a danger to keep it closed instead of making it open, because if what is closed, you also cannot, you cannot address or you cannot remedy or you cannot work with it. But because then it's being traded secretly, and something comes out which nobody else can understand. I don't know. I mean, this was.
I mean,
my
it's a standard answer in a way, but it's. When you're talking about such powerful new technologies, I don't know that we have an answer to it. I certainly think that public awareness and vigilance of misuses is the most important thing. I certainly agree with that.
Definitely.
And I don't know of another strategy in that case. I don't know what else could be done. You're quite right that they're claiming, in fact, in synthetic biology at MIT every year they have a meeting where a contest. Where high school students with no training whatsoever come together and build strands of DNA and create biobricks. So the scientists themselves say that within a few years' time, it will be theoretically possible and probably real possible that kids would be able to sit around and build little life forms. I mean, self-replicating life forms that are synthetic. We had the first self-replicating life form constructed, just a microbe, a few months ago. In the United States. We've never before had that in history. If everyone can do it, then we could find ourselves in a very strange world.
Yeah.
And the only way to protect ourselves from that, I suppose, is global vigilance.
Yeah, definitely. And structures or big codes of conduct or something to say, or legal
instruments. I'm not sure the
instruments.
Law works, but...
I don't know. To say, or licenses or whatever, to say we don't, with those things, we are not going to do this kind of practices.
Well, agreements, perhaps. Again, the licenses can be broken and the laws can be broken.
Sure.
And all of that is easy to break. So I think the only real solution is that there's a social attitude which says that this is not acceptable behavior. I'm more concerned, frankly, about the commercial abuses and efforts to control life than I am about the making of the life. I think that's the greater danger is that companies will use this to say, okay, biology is ours. Making life is our business. We're
also
in charge.
Patenting DNA.
Yeah, so they will use weapons to keep everyone else from doing it. But there is a risk, of course, of accidental releases that could be dangerous, and there is the risk of new pathogens being created that could be disastrous for our crops or people or something. But I think the commercial controls of the technology are the most dangerous.
Okay. Well, is there anything else you would like to share in that?
Well, one other area, just quickly. We seem to be moving into a world where it's getting increasingly peculiar, I suppose. The United Nations a few years ago, UN University, did a study where they talked about the massively destructive individual. That it's not the weapons of mass destruction, but the massively destructive individual that has to be monitored. And that scares me when they talk that way, this kind of policing of people. Because now, with synthetic biology, any living material can be made dangerous. With nanotechnology, any other material can be made dangerous. Like they've already discovered that at the nanoscale, things like aluminum oxide can become dangerous. Dentists use aluminum oxide to repair your teeth, and they're perfectly safe. And they can, the aluminum oxide can be in your mouth all of your life, and you're fine. At the nanoscale, aluminum oxide explodes, and the United States Air Force uses it to ignite bombs. So suddenly, materials which at one level are perfectly safe, at another level are extremely dangerous. And that's true as you look through the periodic table. If you, gold, for example, perfectly safe at the normal scale, at the nanoscale, gold can be used as a as a catalyst for chemical reactions. So again, it can be dangerous. And that's true across the board. So in a world where almost anything can be used to do almost anything, living or at the nanoscale, how do you create an environment in which governments then are able to say, okay, in that risky environment, we have to have total control over our populations. We have to have total surveillance and total capacity to control what people do. And that's a very scary kind of world. We don't want a world in which there's this massive surveillance by governments, Big Brother kind of watching us. But I think these technologies move us in that direction. So I think we need to have a debate about the kinds of risks that are involved with these technologies and what level of government intervention we want in our lives.
Mm-hmm. And how we organize ourselves around this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.